How's it? My name is Lassetti. I'm a tour leader with Explore. Come on, let me show you something. Oh, careful. Can you see it?
Oh, trust me. It can see you.
There, between the trees.
It's not every day you get to see a rhino on a walk. I guess not everyone is taken to the right places. But you will be, if you explore. For global adventures, search explore.co.uk and don't just travel. Explore.
Are you, like me, a spinster? Are you single, child-free, and tired of the stigma attached to your situation in life? Are you actually having a bloody great time living your best life while all of your friends are tied up with their husbands and kids? If you think being a spinster is actually pretty awesome and you want to change the old-fashioned narrative, you want people to realise that not having a relationship or kids gives you the freedom to live a fabulous life all on your own terms. If this is you, then you've come to the right place. If, on the other hand, you're a spinster who isn't feeling quite so great about it, you've also come to the right place. Because I want you to feel great about it. I want you to know that your life is just as valid, valuable, and meaningful as anyone else's. If you're also interested in personal growth and working on yourself to become the best possible version of you, then you're in luck, because we're also going to be talking about my other obsession, personal development, and how we can use the extra time we've been gifted due to our lack of relationship and children, and use that time to really become the people we want to be. I'm excited, and I hope you are too. Join me every Tuesday for episodes with just me, or me and one of my brilliant guests. My name is Lucy Megason. I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome to Spinsterhood Reimagined. Hello, and a very warm welcome back to Spinsterhood Reimagined. Thank you so much for joining me. Now, I fell in love with my guest on this week's episode before I even met her on the Zoom screen. We had been voice noting over on Instagram, and I could just tell that she was completely divine just from listening to her messages. Her name is Nancy Levin. She is the CEO and founder of Levin Life Coach Academy. She's also a multi-best-selling author who has written 7 books, including the upcoming Embrace Your Shadow to Find Your Light, a shadow work journal, which comes out in June, but which you can pre-order right now. She's also the host of the Nancy Levin Show podcast. Nancy is single, she is child-free, and she is fucking fabulous. She was married, but she's now divorced, and you will hear all about that in part 2 of this conversation, because we talked for quite a while, so I've decided to put this out in 2 parts, which I also did for my previous guest, Paul Ward. I do try not to go over the hour, because I know how busy you guys all are. Anyway, I also wanted to just briefly mention that Nancy used to have a very high-powered job at Hay House Publishing, and she was good friends with both Louise Hay and Wayne Dyer, which I obviously ask her about. Now, many of you will know who both of them are, but in case you don't know who either of them are, Louise Hay was a self-help author and the founder of Hay House Publishing, and Wayne Dyer was a spiritual leader, many of whose books I've read. Anyway, it really was a delight to interview Nancy. She is super bright. She's absolutely lovely. She's a great speaker, and she speaks to a lot of the personal growth stuff that I talk about so much. So, without further ado, here is the fabulous Nancy Levin. Nancy Levin, thank you so, so, so much for joining me, and a very, very, very warm welcome to Spinsterhood Reimagined. It is So fabulous to have you here, and I'm very excited to get into this conversation. But before we do, can you just tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. And I am giddy over the moon to be here.
Oh.
As I told you in my message, I'm like fangirling, so I'm very excited.
Bless you. Well, thanks. I'm yes. excited too.
Wonderful. So currently I am a life coach. I also train and certify coaches in my academy. I am an author of 7 books. My 7th book is coming out in the summer of 2024, so this summer. And I got to this place very unexpectedly. So I was previously the event director at Hay House Publishing for 12 years. And I always say I had a front row seat and a backstage pass to all of the teachers and authors and speakers in the field of personal growth, self-help. And I was very fortunate to be quite close with Louise Hay herself, Wayne Dyer, many of the luminaries in this field. And yet I wasn't able to let all the teachings truly land in me until I was in my own crisis. And my own crisis came in the form of blowing up my marriage. And so when that happened, I was really very blessed to, as I said, be close to so many of the teachers and speakers and authors. And Debbie Ford, who is really credited with bringing shadow work to the masses, was my dear friend at the time and became my teacher and mentor. So right about the time that things were blowing up and I was not knowing what to do because I had built an image of perfection that I was presenting to the world and managing the perception of others so that I would only be seen through the very specific lens I gave them to see me through. My nickname at Hay House was the Queen of the Impossible. And, you know, I was chasing all the external validation, all the gold stars. You know, I was boundaryless. I was a people pleaser, peacekeeper, conflict avoider to the max. And it was Debbie who said to me this weekend, it was February of 2010. Debbie said, you know, this weekend at our event, you're going to delegate production to your staff and you're going to sit your ass in the chair and you're going to do the work. Wow. And that was really the catalyst for me being willing to look at myself and my own truth, which I had really not wanted to look at and certainly didn't want anyone else to see. And so in that moment, I knew that I wanted to pursue Debbie's coach training, even though I had no designs on leaving Hay House. It was my dream job. But I left Hay House ultimately to go out on my own. A decade ago.
Wow, Nancy, my gosh. I mean, what a story. And I'm excited to dive more into it. But before we do, can I just say, oh my gosh, you personally knew Louise Hay and Wayne Dyer. I mean, wow. Tell me a little bit about each of those people. I just need to ask this question.
Of course. I mean, it's funny, you know, they are people in my life who were sort of like regulars. You know, I mean, I spent the night at Louise's house frequently when I was in San Diego because that's where Hay House was based. And I live in Boulder, Colorado. I was traveling over 200 days a year. So Louise would, you know, make me breakfast and we would sort of do jammies together and things like that, which was hilarious. I also loved traveling with her. I traveled really around the world with Louise. And, you know, we would fly first class, which was very lovely. But every single time we were on a plane, Louise was like a little girl. She was like, can you believe this is our life? You know, and they would bring over the champagne, you know, before we took off. And she was like a little girl just sort of kicking her feet in the chair. She was really, you know, so many things that have lasting impact on me about Louise are first really looking at everything as an opportunity and to really recognize that we are not fully formed, you know, even into her 80s and, you know, 90, she, if someone said, you know, Louise, have you ever skydived? She would say, not yet. You know, everything was like, there's a possibility this could happen for me. And it was
Love
really
that.
a beautiful way to approach things. She, in her 80s, I love this too, she took a children's art class near her
Wow.
home. I mean, she was 80 or in her
Wow.
80s, and she took a children's art class.
Good for
You know,
her.
like that was how she was. And so that was, she was remarkable. And the other thing about her is that she was so precise with her language. And that's something that I really have picked up and carried forward. She would never say, don't forget. She would say, please remember. You know, not to plant the seed of forgetting, but to plant the seed of remembering. Or she never said, I can't wait for something. She would say, I'm excited for. Because the truth is, I can wait and I will wait and we have to wait. So little things like that had a lot of impact.
I mean, it's just incredible to hear this, and what a privilege that you were able to spend
Oh,
so much quality
oh,
time with her.
yeah.
One thing I'd love to pick up on, though, because it's
Sure.
something that I've talked about on the podcast, which is what you were saying about how she watches what she says, how she watches
Yep.
her language.
Yep.
Can you speak to how incredibly important it is to watch what you say and to
Yep.
make sure that you are talking about things that you want to happen rather than things that you don't want to happen, that you're
Yep.
talking about things in the future, you know, where you're going rather than
Yes.
where you've been or where you don't want to be. Can you speak to that, Nancy? I'd love to hear what you have to
Absolutely.
say.
Sure. You know, Louise used to say, don't think the thoughts that scare you. And, you know, both Louise and Wayne were. I mean, I would say we're famous for the way, you know, Wayne with, you know, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, you know, and Louise with her, you know, the way that we can choose our thoughts. And the bottom line is science has proven that we have a negativity bias in our brain. We default to the negative. So if we look for what's wrong, we will find it. And the flip side is also true. If we look for what's right, we will find it. But we are so used to going down the rabbit hole of the negative. And I don't say this in a Pollyanna way, but if we start looking for what's right or start looking for the positive, or at least give ourselves the opportunity to e give equal airtime to the positive, you know, small things, even like, you know, if I don't receive a text back in the time frame I want. The natural inclination is, you know, they don't love me anymore. They're mad at me. What did I do wrong? You know, we go there. We don't go to, oh, maybe their phone's out of juice, or maybe they left it at the grocery store, or maybe they have an appointment that came up last minute. Like, we don't go there. But we can save ourselves a ton of energy if we at least are willing to entertain both possibilities and wait until we know the truth. To then decide how we feel.
I could talk about this stuff all blooming day, and I'm just so pleased to have you here because, you know, I'm already just loving this conversation so much. Before we get properly into it, I just have to ask very briefly about Wayne Dyer
Yes, of course.
because he's someone that
Yes.
I love. I've read his books, I've listened to,
Yes.
you know, multiple recordings of him, and I think he's awesome. And, you know, he's such a kind of he's a major spiritual leader. And having gone through what I refer to as my spiritual awakening over the last 4 years, he's definitely been one of the people who I have sort of learned a lot from. So I would love to just ask you, what was he like as a person?
I love that man with all my heart, honestly. What I loved most about Wayne was how he took such interest in other people. So no matter, you know, we would often have, you know, we'd be shuttled from airports to venues and we'd, you know, we'd be in a car with a driver or a taxi or whatever. Wayne would be the one to strike up conversation and ask about whoever it is. Wayne loved speaking with hotel staff, especially the maids. Wayne was a very good tipper. You know, Wayne loved being on, like being in airports. He loved being recognized, not so much for the fame of it, but he loves people. He loved people. So he loved being recognized in an airport because it gave him an opportunity to strike up a conversation about the other person.
Right.
And so he had, yeah, a lot of heart. I have a very funny Wayne Dyer story for
Go
you.
for it.
And it actually opens my book, Setting Boundaries Will Set You Free. This was, I think, 2007 or 8, maybe. We had done an event in Atlanta and we flew to Detroit to do an event the next day. And we arrived in Detroit and we all had dinner. My staff, you know, we all, and Wayne, we all had dinner. We always would eat together. And then we went our separate ways to our rooms to go to sleep. And about 10 o'clock that night, Wayne called me and he said, "I don't have my briefcase. And all my notes are in there for the talk. And there's some money in there. There's notes for my new book. Like, there's a lot of stuff in this briefcase. I need my briefcase. I can't go on stage without my briefcase." And he wasn't blaming me in any way. He was just kind of freaking out about his briefcase. The thing is that he only used his briefcase when we went from the hotel to the venue. And in this case, we actually went then from the venue right to the airport. So he wasn't accustomed to traveling with his briefcase. And I had the hunch that it must be in the van we took from the venue to the airport. So I said, "Hang out. I'm gonna, you know, figure out what I need to do." And I called the car company and they said that van isn't due back here till midnight. So I called back at midnight and I said, "You know, please go out and check the van." They did. They came back to the phone and said, "It's not there." I said, "I really know it's there. Take a flashlight. It's black. It's dark. The interior of the van is dark. Go, you know." And sure enough, they come back, they've got the briefcase. So now I have to figure out how to get the briefcase from Atlanta to Detroit. And the event is Sunday, the next day at 2 p.m. So I said, "Can I pay someone on your staff to fly here with the briefcase?" They said, "Post 9/11, you can't fly with something that isn't yours." So that wasn't something they were willing to do. So I'm on the phone with my travel agent in California. Fortunately, the time difference was in our favor. Is there any freight company? Is there, you know, there was no FedEx delivering on a Sunday. There was no UPS. Like, there was no way. So my travel agent and I were doing this from about midnight to 2 in the morning, trying to figure out how we're getting the briefcase here. The next thing I know, I'm in a taxi on the way to the Detroit airport, booking myself a flight in the taxi. I send emails to my entire staff who've never run an event without me saying, "Here's the deal. I have to go retrieve Wayne's briefcase. You are going to, you know, here are all the contacts. Here's what needs to happen." We were expecting about 1,500 people.
Wow.
And so I fly to Atlanta. The guy meets me in baggage claim. He hands me the briefcase. I turn around to go back through. Of course, they have to stop me because I'm making such a quick turnaround. You know, they have to do the whole thing. I get on the plane with the briefcase and I called Wayne and I said, "I have your briefcase." And he said, "What do you mean? Nancy, did you do something crazy?" I said, "That is unimportant. I will see you at the venue." We meet at the venue. And right as he's getting out of his town car, you know, that picked him up at the hotel, and there are throngs of people around him to like await his arrival. And I get out of my taxi from the airport and I'm marching toward him, and he sees me with the briefcase and I'm giving it to him. And he's like, "Oh, that old thing? I don't need that." And I gave him the finger. I flipped off the father of motivation in front of his fans. And he, of course, was pulling my leg. And I always introduced him. I was the MC for all of our events. So on stage, I introduced him and welcomed him to the stage. And as I was bringing him on, we hugged. And I was walking off, and he pulled me toward him. And he said to the audience, "You know, I want to tell you what this woman did for me." And it was really beautiful. And What I now know is I did that for, I did it for accolades. I did it because I had no boundaries. I did it because I was the queen of the impossible. I did it because I wanted more gold stars. I did it because I wanted to be the one and the only one who could do it. And it was a huge moment for me to recognize how overtaken I was by the need to please, and how I put everyone else's needs above and beyond my own.
Gosh.
And, if I did something like that today, it would have to be from a place of heart. It would have to be from a place of generosity, not from what can I get out of this.
Yeah, such an interesting story, and very brave of you to admit what your true motivation was for doing that at the time,
100%.
because that's not easy to admit. And what I will say is that I haven't got on a plane from Detroit to Atlanta and back to retrieve Wayne Dyer's briefcase. However, I've done things in my people-pleasing days back in the
Yep.
day where I would put myself out for someone when it was massively inconvenient for me. And it wasn't about generosity, it was because I wanted to be liked, or I didn't want to be
Right, of
disliked. And
course.
it was, and we do this, don't we? And let's talk about boundaries, actually, because obviously you've written a book about boundaries, and boundaries are something I've mentioned on the podcast. I haven't gone into huge detail, but there's something that I have been very consciously trying to put more into place in my life, and certainly have done over the last few years. I've become much better able to say no to people, no to things I don't want to do, and just really understand that I need boundaries to take care of me. And I think, let's face it, women especially are people pleasers, and we do things that are like exactly like your Wayne Dyer story, for the wrong reasons. So what else would you say to women about boundaries? And what are kind of your top tips, I guess, or your most sage piece of advice about boundaries, why we need them and how to put them in place?
Yes. And first I want to say, we come by having no boundaries, honestly. We are not taught to have boundaries. This is not something that's encouraged or taught. And so, I know for me, given my own personal history, I was born into a family where my older brother was very ill and he ultimately died. And I took on, the imprint on me, the shadow beliefs that got imprinted on me are, if I am broken like he is, I will die. And thus began the quest for perfectionism.
How old were you when he died?
I was two.
Wow.
The belief of his needs are more important than mine. Better I be self-sufficient and independent. And that's what carried me through into my even, into my marriage. I often say when I met my husband, he said, "Hi, I'm broken." I mean, it was this as if he said, "Hi, I'm broken." And I said, "Well, great, I'm Superwoman. I will fix you, And I began sublimating all my wants and needs in service of his. Again, boundarylessness. And so it wasn't until really, I would say 15 years ago that I even understood what a boundary was. And the way I define boundaries are the limits that we set around what we will or will not do, will or will not tolerate, and will or will not accept. And boundaries are very personal. So my boundaries are personal to me. What's okay and what's not okay for me. And my boundaries are between me and me, even if they involve someone else. So the biggest myth about boundaries is that other people cross them.
Right, we let them,
So,
in other
yeah.
words.
So if my boundaries are being crossed, I am the one crossing my own boundaries. And once we get that, that's when we can really make a shift, because then we're not pointing a finger and blaming someone else. We don't stay in victimhood. We move into responsibility and empowerment, because our boundaries are our responsibility to name to ourselves and to uphold. So it's not anyone else's responsibility to uphold them. So a boundary is not you need to or don't. A boundary is here's what's okay and not okay for me and how I am going to take care of myself.
What a brilliant way of putting it. I absolutely love the way that you just said that. And you're so right. Like you say, it's not about what somebody else does or doesn't do. It's what we allow or don't allow somebody to do. And the
Right.
responsibility is entirely on us. Now, you mentioned the word victimhood, which is a word that I have definitely mentioned multiple times on the podcast, because I 100% used to be a victim. I would blame that thing or that boss or that guy or that friend or that situation or whatever it was. And for many years, because I was feeling so damn sorry for myself, it did not occur to me that I was acting like a victim. And had somebody said that to me at the time, I would probably have, said something I might have regretted. But these days, I look back and I can see 100% that I was. And so, because of that, it is a message that I quite passionately want to try and, hopefully as gently and sensitively as possible get across. Because when it comes to being single, for example, or not having kids, maybe it's even more relevant to, well, it's relevant to both, but maybe it's particularly relevant to someone who hasn't had kids because, not by choice, because they weren't able to. But I would love, because one of the main things that I wanted to talk to you about, and we need to get into your situation with your marriage and how you ended up leaving, and what it was that was the kind of final straw that kind of gave, how did you find the strength and all of that. But really, what I would love you to speak to is essentially this notion that we need a partner to be happy, and this idea that, and I'm not saying, there are many, many single women out there who don't feel like that, and I know that because I'm in touch with them.
I
But
know, I know.
I also know that there are plenty of them out there who are, feeling very sorry for themselves because they're single. They feel as though if only they would find a guy or a girl, and then everything would be fine. Find their quote unquote other half, a phrase that I absolutely loathe. Although I've even found myself using that phrase, just literally, it's kind of come out of my mouth before on the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. But really, as you'll know from the podcast, one of my main messages is to say to women, whether or not we're going to end up in a relationship down the line, we do not need, nobody needs a partner in order to feel whole, in order to feel fulfilled, in order to feel content, happy, satisfied, peaceful. You just don't, because it comes from within. So I really want to hear from you on this, because I'm pretty damn sure you're going to have some words of wisdom. So take it away.
Oh my goodness. I mean, we are soul sisters
I
in
know.
this, Lucy. I mean, yes. So, first, just to give context, I will share. I do not have children, have never wanted children, not for one second. I love being an aunt. My sister has kids. I love being an aunt. I never, ever wanted children. And it's interesting because I'm the older sister. And ever since, I got married first. And my mom kept saying to me, "Why do you keep telling me you don't want children?" And I said, "Well, you keep asking me. So if you keep asking me, I'm going to keep telling you." I was like, that's very simple.
That's a great response, because you keep asking me. I love it.
That's why I keep telling you. So if you stop asking me, I don't need to tell you anymore. So I never wanted children. My 18-year marriage, I will share more about how I blew it up. And then I did have a relationship post my divorce, but I have been out of relationship
I'm sorry
since.
about Johnny meowing. I'm so sorry. I just had to interrupt you
Oh,
because
I
my
didn't even
cat
hear
has.
it.
Mike, oh, did you not? Because he has such a
No.
loud meow.
Oh,
Sorry,
no, let him
Nancy.
meow. I like
He just came
he
through
has
the
things to
window.
say. has things to
The
say.
cat. He's. Oh, we'll have to. We might have to deal with a few meows throughout the
That's
rest of the
quite
episode. But
okay.
I'm so sorry. Carry on.
No, that's totally fine. I've been out of relationship since 2018. So that's 6 years, I guess. Yeah. And in that time, I haven't dated or anything. Like, I have zero interest. And it's also interesting because people will say, "Are you dating?" And I say, "Why would I?"
Oh my God, another brilliant response. I
That's
love that.
literally what I say. Why would I do that to
Oh my
myself?
God, that's
I
hilarious. I love
know.
it.
And the truth is, I love more than anything, I love my alone time. And I've heard you talk about this so much. You know, I don't want anything. I don't want to wake up next to someone. I don't want to go to sleep next to someone. I don't want anything in infringing on my time. And the benefits of relationship that other people seem to talk about, I don't hold as true for me. I could say it that way, you know. So I feel very strongly about the position I'm in around really getting to design the life that I love and really getting to make choices that work for me. In a recent podcast episode of mine, I shared this sort of realization that I think my teenage self had it right. Because as a teenager, I just wanted to hang out alone in my room. I didn't have very many friends. I just wanted to read and write in my journal and do my own thing. And my parents thought something was wrong with me. I was a straight A student, so it wasn't about my intelligence, but they just thought something was wrong with me. And that message got super imprinted. You know,
Right.
there must be something wrong with me. I'm being
Yeah.
looked at under a microscope. And
Another
so,
stigma, the stigma of spending time alone.
exactly, right, exactly. You know, so I did the things that I was sort of supposed to do, but you know, I didn't date or anything when I was young. I mean, I didn't, you know, even like barely knew what a boy was till I went away to college at like 19. And then I even remember I lost my virginity and I'm like, really? This is what everybody's talking about? I'm like, really? But, you know, and listen, I've had great sex in my life, but I also am like, oh, who needs, like, it's so much drama. My life is so drama-free single. Like, that's one thing I can say. Being
Totally.
single, I have so much space in my brain to focus on things that are a much better use of my energy than the drama of like, what do I need to do or say to make everything be okay? Is he mad at me? Blah, blah, blah. Like all of that bullshit. I like have zero tolerance for any of it anymore.
Oh my gosh, I love this so much. It's just, it's so refreshing to hear somebody else say, you know, it's as if you're reading my mind because I
I
feel,
get it.
yeah, totally. What would you say to those women who aren't there yet and who still feel as though that is what they need in order to make them happy? Like, and actually, this takes us back to you saying when you came out of your, or before you come out of your relationship and your colleague sat you down at work and said, right, you're going to sit in this chair and do the work. Because I have a feeling that that might be where this bit of the conversation goes. It maybe not, but
It is exactly where, Lucy. You're so right on. You're so aligned. Yes. Yeah. You know, I tend to now, from this vantage point, look at relationship as one long continuum with a revolving door on the other end. You know, because it's going to be same person, different clothes. Or, you know, and we have to recognize that the common denominator in all of our relationships is us. And that's really what it comes back to. So I knew, I mean, the relationship I had post-divorce was light years beyond the relationship I had in my marriage. And yet it became clear to me that this whole, you know, I have one of my other books is called The New Relationship Blueprint. And it also came out, it has different titles in hardcover and paperback. So in paperback, it's Permission to Put Yourself First. But it's really about how, if you want your relationships to be different, what needs to change is you. And this ultimately is about self-love. It's not really about partnership. You know, it's
Totally.
sort of cloaked, perhaps. The Trojan horse might be around partnership, but it's
Yeah.
really about, you know, how do I show up? How do, you know, am I willing to go back and examine my role in all of this? And what did I bring? And what did I do? And how did, what did I expect? And what did I, you know, perceive? How did I self-sabotage all of this? And, you know, that book really starts out with the whole Jerry Maguire thing, you know, you complete me. And, you know, that whole myth or Disney, you know, all the shit we were fed, especially as little girls. And I was not a little girl who was like playing bride or anything like that. Like it was never a thing for me.
Me neither.
But we get so sucked in. And this is why I say, like, my teenage self had it right. I got sucked into, well, I guess I should have a boyfriend. I guess I should get married. Thank God I didn't get sucked into having kids. But, you know, I got sort of sucked into all this when now I'm like, oh, I knew what was right for me at
Yeah.
that time. And I think ultimately what it comes to down to for women who are still longing or yearning for partnership, not from the place of I want to, you know, share my life with someone, so to speak, but from a place of I'm incomplete, or there's something wrong with me, or I need another human. I think it comes back to the way that we relate to ourselves, that we relate to our own self-worth, the way that we relate to our own self-doubt, the way we relate to what we believe, what we make it mean if we are single,
Yeah.
the way we are so accustomed to giving our power away to someone or something else.
Yeah.
You know, on the verge of 60 years old, I feel the best I have ever felt in my life.
Oh, God,
I
I so
feel the
relate to
most
that.
clear. I feel strong. I feel confident. I feel unencumbered. These are not things I could have ever said before. I attribute it to the fact that I have made a conscious choice to be solo.
Yeah.
I have to say, the first, I mean, I've been listening to your podcast for quite a while,
Thank you.
and the first time I saw the name of it, I just flipped. Like spinsterhood. I mean, it's so good. And then I, you know, just the whole idea of what a spinster really truly is, which is an empowered woman who does
Right.
not need a man. But of course, society takes it into a whole other realm, you
Yeah.
know, takes it into the negative.
Can I just say, I have
Please,
never heard
anything.
anyone, I have never heard anyone describe a spinster as that before. Can you just say that one more time? Because it's just so fucking awesome, and I need to hear you say it again.
I mean, that a spinster is a woman who does not need a man, who has the power, who is successful, who has everything she needs. I really see that. And it's so
Yeah.
funny because I have said before, I have a friend who's gay, and she talks about like a being a gold star lesbian, which means she's never been with a man. She's only been with women. So that's what a gold star lesbian is. And I always say, I wish I could be a gold star spinster. I wish I'd never gotten married. I wish I had at that time really had enough clarity and strength and courage and wherewithal. I, you know, and just self-awareness really is the bottom line. I wish in my 20s I had enough self-awareness to know, wait a minute, put the reins on this. This is not the direction I want my life to go, but I'm just going with the flow of what everyone else seems to be doing.
Oh my gosh, Nancy, I just you're taking my breath away, because what you just said, particularly, I want to pick up on about how you're about to be 60, looking freaking amazing, may I just add. That's neither
Thank
here
you.
nor there, but you are.
Thank you.
Actually, I just had literally the episode that goes out on the day that we're recording this is with Heidi Clements. Do you know Heidi
I
Clements?
don't.
She's basically, she is a social media sensation, I would say. She was a script writer, and she basically started telling stories via social media. And what she does a Get Dressed With Me, and over the top of it is there's like a voiceover where she tells various stories. And she is very much pro aging, and she's awesome. She is fierce. There's no messing about with her. She's a force to be reckoned with, but she's fabulous. Anyway, that episode goes out today. But
Yay.
the reason I mention Heidi is because Heidi is 63, and she wants to flip the narrative about the way that the world sees women over 50,
Yep.
basically women who are in menopause, who, as she puts it,
Yeah.
are no longer fuckable according to
Right.
society, which I just think is
I mean, I downloaded it this morning. I saw it come in.
okay.
And I saw that, I saw that line in the description. Yep.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, yes, because that is the message that she is trying to convey
Yep.
to, she's basically saying, we are made to feel invisible over 50. This is a load of
Yep.
bullshit. This is absolute bullshit. And the reason I pick up on what you say is because I think that, and in fact, firstly, what you said about how you have never felt so clear, you've never felt so, I love the way that you use the word unencumbered, because that is exactly how I feel, although I've never attributed it to that word. I've never thought to describe it using that word, unencumbered, but I think that's brilliant. Such a great way of describing how it feels to be free of a relationship. And actually, one thing I just want to mention, which I meant to mention earlier, is that when you and I were voice noting over Instagram, when we were organizing this interview, you made me laugh because you said, I'm proudly child free and relationship free. And I'd never heard anyone say they were relationship free. And it's so brilliant. But the point that I'm trying to get to is that I really feel at the age of 48, so yeah, okay, only 10 years on, it's only 10 years. I mean, what the hell is that? Nothing.
Right.
I also feel like I wish my younger self had had the self-awareness to realize all of these things and to understand so many things. And I'm sure some of it comes with age, wisdom comes with age and all the rest of it. But I almost feel excited because I feel as though what happens, ironically, when us spinsters who are all left on the shelf and haven't been chosen and da 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 da, actually, that is when we truly step into our freaking power. That is when we truly come into our own. The way that I feel about myself, my confidence and just my sort of authenticity and just knowing who the fuck I am
Yep.
is something that has come in these 7 years that I've been single now. And it's something I feel so passionately about because it's as if we've just got it so wrong when it comes to single women. We've got it so wrong because when you find that power and when you realize how great life gets to be relationship free, then you're like, oh my God. It's like you said about the dating thing. You said, when somebody asks you, are you dating? And you're like, why aren't you dating? Why would I? Because why the fuck would we in many ways? And that isn't to say, and I do stress on this podcast that I'm not anti-relationships, but I think I'm becoming, I actually think the longer it goes on and the older I get, I'm becoming more anti-relationships. But it's not in a kind of anti-men or anti,
No.
whatever kind of, it's just a realization of how much better a human I am and how much more powerful and how much more able and how much more sorted I feel on my own. So
Same.
I absolutely love what you just said. Now, I really want to talk about, you mentioned self-worth and self-love. I mean, this is
Yeah.
just so key. And I know you, and actually, I would like to touch on money randomly going off on a tangent, but you have written a book called Worthy,
Yes.
Boost Your Self-Worth, Grow Your Network, which I
Yes.
admit I haven't yet read, but I'm going to.
Okay.
But I can imagine what it is, the sort of
Yeah.
premise of what it's about. And funnily enough, I'm in my membership, Thrive Solo, my membership for single women.
Yes.
We are currently doing a money book as well. So this topic is kind of in my mind. So let's just talk about self-worth from both a more general perspective and from a money perspective. Why is self-worth so incredibly important? How can women who don't have it, how can they get more of it? And how does it relate to money?
I so appreciate you asking this. So, the premise of the book Worthy and the coaching that I do around that really is looking at when we believe we are not enough, we also believe we'll never have enough. And so that's the correlation. And there is a direct correlation between our level of self-worth and our level of net worth. And net worth, of course, is about money, but it's also about power. It's also about control. It's also about energy. It's also about time. It's also about freedom. So our net worth is looking at all the components that make us who we are. And we, especially as women, tend to tamp down instead of going grand. So, and we also, as women, tend to relate to the world as being a zero-sum game. If you have, I must go without. Or if I have, you must go without. And it's not that. So we tamp ourselves down around what we're willing to desire and willing to receive. And that is at the crux of where I go in worthy. We have to be willing to open ourselves up to desire, not convincing ourselves we can't have what we want. Why bother wanting? Which I know for myself, for decades, I prided myself on having no needs. And we have to expand our capacity for wanting and then expand our capacity for actually having. And that's really what it comes down to. And then from the place of self-worth, we, and I guarantee everyone listening could chime in around this. We have to start looking at what are we doing to prove and earn our worth. So for decades, I mean, flying across the country for Wayne's briefcase, proving and earning my worth. Always it was related to what I achieved, what I produced, what I did for others. That was how I proved and earned my worth. And being able to come to a place of really knowing within me that my worth is inherent based on the fact that I'm a human on this planet. Nothing needs to be proven, nothing needs to be earned.
Thank you guys so much for listening once again. I really hope you enjoyed this first half of my interview with Nancy. Next week, we talk all about the breakup of Nancy's marriage and how she subsequently sort of came back to herself, basically. We also talk about what it means to live an other-referenced life, why we should be selfish, and why fearing criticism is actually a sign that we're internally criticizing ourselves. Do not miss it. Nancy has many, many more words of wisdom to share next week, too. Follow me on Instagram at Spinsterhood Reimagined. Subscribe to my YouTube channel where I'm posting longer video clips of the podcast. You can email me on lucy@lucymegason.com. And if you would like to give back to this podcast, you can now support the show for just $3 a month. This podcast really is more than a full-time job for me, so if it brings you value, then please do consider supporting it. I would be hugely, hugely grateful. Okay, until next time, remember that one day I will get Jennifer Aniston on this podcast. Yes, I will. Lots of love. Bye.